Welcome to Dear Watchers, a Marvel What If podcast, where we do a deep dive into the long-running Marvel comic book series, What If?
Traveling through the storylines before and after that inspired or took inspiration from the week's issue. And your Uatus on this journey are me, Ido, and you, Rob.
And with that, dear watchers, let's check out what's happening in the multiverse with today's episode. What If Volume 1, Issue Number 26, What If Captain America Were Elected President?
This is Earth 81426, and on this Earth, we get to see that Captain America has been offered the chance to run for president, seen in a Earth 616 issue we'll discuss shortly. But he takes the chance in this world, running and winning, but quickly being manipulated by the Red Skull, who is posing as a revolutionary, gains control of a space weapon that could destroy the United States, but ends up instead killing himself, Red Skull, and our president, Captain America.
And before we talk more about the What If issue, let's talk about some of the origin issues that help set up the events in the What If. And to do that, we went way back to some of the earliest, in fact, the first Captain America appearances, as well as some of his appearances into the 60s and 70s. We actually started even in the pre-Marvel era with Captain America comics number 1 and number 7. Those are from March 1941 and October 1941.
And these are both by Joe Simon and Jack Kirby, published by Timely Comics, pre-Marvel. We read the first issue as the first Cap appearance, the first Red Skull appearance, though not Johann Schmidt. The seventh issue is the first Johann Schmidt as Red Skull appearance.
And I think this might have been the earliest comic I've ever read. I might have read some early JSAs from the same time period, but definitely, I'm a very much a newbie to the pre-Stan Lee, pre-modern comics era. So
the golden
it was
age.
Definitely, the golden age. So it was a fun experience for me reading something here, and also kind of fun that, you know, they're already, you know, this fantastical world, but it's actually happening during World War II. Of course, Hitler's being punched out on the cover. So there's these real things, there's Nazis, there's swastikas everywhere, but yet it is someone with superpowers. The Human Torch is even mentioned, the android Human Torch. So we're in a world full of superheroes, but also fighting World War II at the same time, which is kind of interesting.
Which sort of situates Marvel in at least the mythological telling of Marvel reflecting reality versus the competitors. And even though this isn't Marvel Comics, of course, this company evolves into Marvel with the famous first issue of Cap punching out Adolf Hitler. So the use of the Nazis and reflecting current events was a pretty big deal at the time, supposedly.
And I had also never seen a comic with this structure where there's actually several short kind of stories within the issue. So it's Cap's origin story, getting the super soldier serum, some other kind of lesser Nazi villains, all kind of Dick Tracy grotesques. And then, of course, the actual Red Skull, where, as you mentioned, it's not the Red Skull that we've come to know and hate, but another person posing as the Red Skull. So it was interesting also kind of seeing these shorter stories and all kind of adding to Captain America's first appearance. And then there's some other heroes kind of almost in an appendix at the end, Hurricane and Tuck, that have, of course, nothing to do with Captain America.
Yeah, or in the seventh issue, Father Time is the other one. So there are some very funny Golden Age things going on. But yeah, I like that they are Captain America's cases that we are getting to see here. So definitely a fun start to go back and look at.
And then really we went into kind of the Captain America, I think, that we all now know, coming out of the ice and joining the Avengers. And he does that in Avengers number 4 from March 1964.
So this issue is written by Stan Lee, penciled by Jack Kirby, inked by George Russo's, colored by Stan Goldberg, and lettered by Artie Simek. And of course, we read it because it is the first Captain America in Marvel Comics, his return.
And I was definitely struck by a much change in tone. That 1941, there's not much dialogue happening. It's pretty much action. It's very rote. And here you definitely get into that kind of famous Stan Lee, you know, everyone's much more verbose. There's much more kind of exciting, kind of comic booky dialogue happening throughout, which was definitely a big change.
Yeah, at the beginning, there's even some of the repositioning of Stan's mythology here, because it refers to the work that he had previously done on Captain America, which while he did write a Captain America story, of course, we know that Simon and Kirby created him. I also like that it starts with that there was an avalanche of fan mail calling for his return. I'm curious if that's true or not, but we might never know that.
Yeah, and it's fun too, kind of, they don't play too much yet with, you know, it's only his first appearance since coming out of the ice. So they don't play too much with the man out of time, but there's a few things like the Hulk is mentioned and Cap doesn't know who the Hulk is. There's some talk about, you know, the modern cars that are happening. And then, of course, I feel like a real standard of comics is that kind of classic hero versus hero battle, which we get because when Captain America's first de-thawed, that he's fighting the other Avengers. And that's, of course, something that we later see in Captain America, in the Civil War, both in the movies and then in an issue that we'll discuss in a little bit too.
Well, and you have Namor the Jerk again, the probably quintessential or archetypal anti-hero. So it's fun to have him in there. I also like that there's a recap of the previous battles that we've seen, and it even refers back to the Fantastic Four. So even though this is 3 years into Marvel, you can really see that they're building out this idea of a shared continuity here. In fact, one piece of trivia, I love that the alien that shows up is actually a member of the race of the Dabari, which are the aliens that Phoenix ends up obliterating their world, which is ultimately why she had to die.
Oh, because in this issue, the alien isn't even given a name, nor is the race even given a name either.
No, correct. You can tell, though, because they look like a stalk of broccoli.
Yes, and if anyone's listening to this and going, why is there an alien in this issue? It is definitely very shoehorned in, but it is fun, as you said, to then tie into a larger setup universe.
Also, it's good to note that the Frozen Cap and Death of Bucky that they retell here were never previously told. So that was a retcon, if you will. We never got to see Captain America frozen in time, and we never got to see Bucky die in the original run.
That's interesting. And on kind of that origin note, we then in the next issues that we discussed are discussing, we get into the origin of the Red Skull. So next up, we read Tales of Suspense number 66 and number 69. Those are from 79. Those are from June 1965 and July 1966.
So both were written by Stan Lee, penciled by Jack Kirby, and lettered by Artie Simek. The earlier issue 66, The Fantastic Origin of the Red Skull, is inked by Chick Stone. And the later issue, The Red Skull Lives, was inked by Frank Jacoya.
And now we really get into kind of the Red Skull that we all know. Not only is his identity now solidified, but also the look, the kind of classic green jumpsuits, the actual skull face is much more reminiscent of what I knew from later issues.
And these Tales of Suspense stories actually retold a lot of the Golden Age Cap stuff, but altered it. So it's part of why Cap's origin has slightly shifted at this point. Red Skull's origin is shifting. So this is really establishing what we now know and what was at that point a slight revisionist history.
Yes, and there, in fact, the Red Skull is survived by some kind of gas. Yeah. So there's an explosion. He's like,
that's why he doesn't age or whatever in theory. Yeah.
Yeah. He's in a mine. There's some kind of gas. Does the Red Skull also have the super soldier serum? Because I think that's something that at some points he has had it and some points he doesn't, or is there another way? Does he have super strength? It's unclear in this issue.
Yeah, I am not aware. All they describe is how he's still alive based on gas, and he can do a lot of the hypnotism. Actually, the second issue we read, 79, he plays a lot with Cap's mind, which I thought was interesting, especially with the issues we're going to read today, the rest of the issues. And I like, at one point I made a note that Captain America says, when he goes to the therapist, he said it might take months to psychoanalyze me and I can't spare the time, but he thinks he's going crazy because Red Skull is manipulating his mind. He also calls Red Skull the most dangerous menace to freedom and democracy the world has ever known. Again, just thinking about the what if question we're exploring today.
And we get some other villains in the one issue as well. Them and AIM pop up, and even
AIM.
Okay. Okay. And I mean, even they think the Red Skull is crazy, which is interesting. I guess when you are dealing with an out and out Nazi, then anyone else seems kind of okay in comparison. And the other thing that's introduced, I notice in this, is the cosmic cube. And that's going to play a big role in some of the later issues we're discussing. Of course, the Cosmic Cube or the Tesseract is also in Captain America, the First Avenger, the movie with the Red Skull. So yes, they're definitely
quite changed there.
Yeah, I was just it was surprising to me that the Cosmic Cube or whatever it is always has some kind of relationship to Captain America and the Red Skull, since they're more earthbound heroes. And this is something that's kind of more mystical and magical that it still plays a role in their journey.
Yeah, it definitely does. It's always around. And the last note I made on this, these issues that are Red Skull, I love when he says, "Do not interrupt my narrative again." I just like there's a sassiness in Captain America and Red Skull that is present in Marvel that is really fun. But I like that he says that.
Yeah, he calls a lot of people swine as well in all of his appearances, which is kind of a classic put down, it seems. Now, next we kind of talked about, and these we are a little less important to the overall arc of the Captain America issues that we're discussing, but these are Captain America number 176 to 180. This is in December 1974, and this is talking about the coming of Nomad when Captain America changes his identity.
Yeah, so we read these because Cap gives up being Captain America because he's lost his sense of what America is. And these issues were all written by Steve Englehart and penciled by Sal Buscema, with different teams on the back end for some of the run here.
And they also change Captain America's origin story a bit again. Instead of the serum, there's Vita rays. That's how he's transformed into the super soldier. So I don't know at what point did they go back to the serum? Because that's kind of what we always think of. We don't know, but
nope.
I guess that's the nature of comics. There's lots of changes all the time.
Interesting stuff in this run is, of course, then his reflections on America. So especially with our what if question that we are considering, I notice, you know, he starts off, his crisis of conscience comes up because he says, "I haven't seen as much nobility as I once did." And people start to turn on him. And so he's sort of lost meaning to people, he decides. And the people around him, including Peggy, tell him that he's a symbol of the country and the country has been a torch of liberty throughout the world. But he now can't figure out what America is. He said, "America's not the single entity that you're talking about. When people the world over look at me, which America am I supposed to symbolize?" Which I think could have been a really interesting question to pose, though, of course, they don't explore it too deeply. At the issue 180 is set up with Captain America lies behind him, buried in the rubble that is politics, 1974. So you get a sense that the writers are also just quite cynical at that point, which perhaps we all would have been.
Yeah, I had to remind myself when reading it about all the things that were happening in current events, from the war in Vietnam to the, you know, rise of Black power and gay liberation, that there were all these things happening, and that it does, and that Captain America as a character is a little bit more black and white. So it's fun to have Steve actually not really be a fully formed human and not really be this black and white character that he's kind of symbolizing, but really reflecting on the time, which is interesting. I also thought it was interesting that just the Peggy and Sharon relationship too. And I wonder if they explore that more in the run, where Peggy actually doesn't know that Steve is Captain America and Steve is dating Sharon. So there's kind of a little bit of a twisted love triangle happening there.
And it also gets retconned and modified many, many times. So 6 years later,
we then jump into kind of the issue, definitely the issue that actually plays the most into today's What If issue that we'll be discussing, which is Captain America number 250. That's from October 1980. Cap for President.
So this had quite the writing team. Roger Stern, Don Perlin, Roger McKenzie, Jim Shooter, penciled by John Byrne and Ed Hannigan. Inked by Joseph Rubinstein, colored by George Russos, lettered by Jim Novak, editor was Jim Salicrup and Bob Budiansky. And in this issue, Captain America saves a congressman at the new Populist Party convention, who then ask him to run for president. And to convince him to run, they sort of preempt his own decision by leaking to the press that he's going to run. But he ultimately gives a speech about how he has to serve the dream of America as Captain America and therefore can't run for president.
I thought this was really interesting because I don't know if I think people were talking about this in 1980. Of course, people are talking about this now in the United States. We've never had this successful third party, and it kind of would take a giant celebrity like Captain America to really propel a third party. And we even see depictions of Reagan and Carter in this issue, which is also pretty interesting.
Well, there's a lot about this issue and the What If that I think are interesting in our modern world, because he also talks a lot about not having experience and whether or not that means he should run or not. He's never had political experience. And then you have the sentiment of people who at one point we have the same types of political idiots, the demos and the GOP keep putting up. The people want to change, and Cap, you could be that change. So yeah, the people who are trying to persuade him are, you know, sort of thinking about the fact that no experience in government could actually be a good thing. So that's a sentiment that has not gone away in the last 40 years.
And one of the people from the new Populist Party talks about, you know, people are sick of always choosing the lesser of two evils. That's something you still also hear at every election. It's like, well, I'm voting for this person because of the lesser of two evils. So let's, of course, put up Captain America instead. So that was very interesting, too.
Yeah, the politics in it are really interesting to see, and especially, I think, how they're reflected in the people around him. So, well, you have Steve, who doesn't know who his own congressman is and admits that at one point, which I do not believe for a second, but is an interesting decision to have him not know that. And then, of course, you have Vision telling him that 1940s solutions are not going to work for today's problems. And you have Beast telling him that he's going to get the mutant vote and the ladies vote, which means he's going to carry New York, which I don't know what that is implying about New York being, Beast, I guess, mostly women and mutants. I don't
know. Beast seemed a lot sassier in this issue than I usually put him in my head. He was a little cheeky. I love you also have a great J. Jonah Jameson appearance. I was surprised that J. Jonah Jameson would have been anti-Reagan, because he talks about how he doesn't like that actors are now running for politics. But I love that they're then able to convince J. Jonah Jameson that, you know, that Captain America shouldn't run because that would lead to other superheroes like Spider-Man running. So I thought that was a really fun bit as well.
Yeah, I know. At one point when they're talking about who his running mate is going to be, that's in the What If. Never mind. We'll get there in a moment.
Yes, they do. These two issues definitely do blend in a lot. The one other thing I thought that was really interesting, and Guido, I don't know if you know when this changed, but I was still surprised that Steve's identity was still secret. And maybe because in most of the MCU movies, you know, everyone knows who Steve Rogers is. They also reveal Tony Stark so early in the movie. So I was really surprised that Captain America's identity is still a secret from the public.
So it turns out that people did know for a long time, but then actually the author of this issue, Steve Englehart, in Avengers 107 a few years earlier, had someone hypnotize the world so that they would forget the identity. And that actually stayed status quo until the 2000s.
Oh, That's interesting. I had no idea because I just figured everyone knew who Captain America was.
Yeah. And we'll get to the what if where that actually changes. But to wrap this issue up too, I think, you know, there's an important speech where he describes why he can't run. And he says he believes it's his duty to the dream and it would severely limit any abilities he might have to preserve that reality. So he's talking about how intense the job of president is and how he'd rather focus on his job in Captain America. And then he made a personal pledge and that people need to look within themselves to find the people that we need to keep this nation strong. And it actually closes with a John F. Kennedy quote.
Yeah, I thought a lot of the imagery at the end of this issue was quite powerful and well done with the images juxtaposed to the speech that Steve gives. So I thought that was great. And a lot of, as we just said, a lot of this imagery, a lot of this story really ties directly into the What If issue that we mentioned at the top of the podcast and that we're going to dive into in much greater detail right now. And that is What If number 26 from April 1981.
Yeah, so you can see this is just actually a few months after that Captain America issue. It's written by Mike W. Barr, inked by Herb Trimp, and colored by Mike Esposito with Carl Gafford lettering and editors Michael Higgins and Denny O'Neill. And so there's an editorial note at the end of Captain America 250 that Roger Stern writes that basically reads as a what if, that the way that issue came about, the reason there are four writers credited on it is because the idea came, well, what if we made Captain America president? And they actually thought about moving him to DC and telling that story, but ultimately decided not to do that. They realized, or Stern realized, that Steve would not say yes to that. And so this what if made sense. And Mike Barr said that Captain America 250 just cried out for a retelling. And one piece of trivia that actually on the cover of What If 26, it's Jack Kirby drawn as the Chief Justice swearing him in.
Yeah, there's a lots of great moments with other characters from the Marvel Universe in here. Fantastic Four have some great moments. Lots of more great moments with J. Jonah Jameson as well. And then I guess a character that was created for this, which is Cap's running mate, whose name is Andrew Jackson Hawk. I'm guessing he was just created for this issue. Is that correct?
So he was not. He actually appeared in an Iron Man a few years prior. He's in very few, actually less than 12 Marvel comics, just as a sort of generic elected official in a scene. Very little characterization. So they pulled him over and used him in that way.
And I thought it was so interesting. I thought this was an in-joke, but I guess it's not. So Andrew Jackson Hawk is also a black man and his last name is Hawk. And of course, Captain America's partner's name is Falcon. So I thought it's just very odd that he's partnering with another bird-related black person. So that I thought that was odd.
I like, there's a conversation where Steve says he's looking for a partner, not an errand boy, and he's not offering a ride to the White House on the back of the bus. So they're explicitly naming the role that having a black running mate would take. Prior to this, someone suggests Sophia Loren as a potential vice presidential pick. So yeah, they were certainly looking for a diverse ticket with someone with an identity different than Steve, but yeah.
But what was interesting was they drew Andrew Jackson Hawk in traditionally villain colors, I noticed. So when you first see him, his color scheme is almost exactly the same as Baron Zemo. It's that same color of that pinkish purple with the yellow. Later, it's exactly Hydra colors. It's red and green. So I kept waiting for him to kind of be some kind of sleeper agent, and I was actually surprised when it turns out that he is just a normal person, and that's not part of the plot.
And stepping back a little, it's interesting, this whole issue starts, Uatu, a quote that he says that in your reality he let them down, meaning the American people. So it's interesting that he's Uatu has sort of positioned this Earth as a perhaps more idealized possibility. And when Steve gives a different speech in this issue, he says, "I've decided not to lose the election because I will run and we will win." So it's interesting framing for how this different decision is going to get made. Of course, in terms of real life timing, we also, in January 1981, Ronald Reagan would have taken office, and this issue came out in April. So it was timed around an election and a change. Of course, Reagan and Carter both show up in this issue in panels.
Yes, and I was surprised that they were named because I thought, oh, maybe they'll just show them. We're kind of supposed to infer, but they do name them both, which is interesting. And is Steve working as an editorial cartoonist at this point? Is that his job, which he seems to still be doing even though he's about to become president?
I have no idea. I don't know where that comes from or how long it persisted.
Because there's a panel where he's like, even though I'm about to become president, I still have a deadline, which does not really seem like something you should be worrying about when you're about to become president.
If we have listeners who know Steve Rogers' career paths, they can share that with us. So the plot, it's interesting too. It obviously is taking in real world events. So I like that one of Steve's platforms and then one of the first things he does other than reveal his identity as he promised was that there'd be no more reliance on foreign oil. And they achieve this through solar power, which of course becomes the weapon that the Red Skull is going to use. I also think it's really interesting that they just lean into, though it's a fictional country of San Pedro, they lean into the idea that Steve and the US are going to arm revolutionaries in a Latin American country. So it's dealing with all of that head on. Of course, the twist that the revolutionary is the Red Skull changes that story a bit. I found it to be quite a surprising twist, I have to say.
I did too. And so just so folks who don't know the full plot, as Guido just mentioned, Cap decides he's going to arm these revolutionaries in this Latin American country. He goes to meet with the socialist pro-democracy leader of that country who, you know, is now taking over. And surprise, surprise, it's actually the Red Skull in disguise. And I thought that was quite surprising. And the Red Skull's motivation
is
kind of funny, which is that he's like, you have now your own country, Captain America. So, of course, I have to have my own country, too. It's very childish.
I love that it's jealousy that's motivating him. It's really great. It does set up, though, an interesting sort of theme that's in this because he says, you had a country of your own. Could I do any less? And so then what happens as the Red Skull is threatening the US with this solar weapon. And then for ridiculous reasons, you know, even though Cap escapes and redirects the solar weapon, it draws back and Cap ends back up there. But in the end, the narrative sort of describes that they belong together. So it's this fun idea that Cap and Red Skull are constantly sort of bound up together. So Red Skull had to create a country because Captain America was ruling over a country, and they had to ultimately sort of die together. It's an interesting theme that is present in here.
Yeah, and the Cap funeral definitely reminded me of the Tony funeral that we then see in Endgame. And I was surprised that Captain America died in the issue. And I guess now Senator Hawke becomes president.
I know.
The first black president is because of Captain America.
Because of the Red Skull, I'd say.
Yes. Which is very ironic since he is a Nazi. So he would definitely not be in favor of that. Very, very interesting issue. So now we're going to talk a bit about some of the issues that came later that might have been inspired by that what if issue. And Guido, were you able to find a lot of these very easily?
No, this was actually tough. I mean, obviously there's no storyline in the 40 years since this what if in which Captain America becomes president with one odd exception. But I looked for moments where he sort of reaffirms his political stance or where he is engaged as a government official. so that we could see if there's any influence from this issue. So,
yeah. And the first issue we're going to discuss is in the Civil War event. And that's Amazing Spider-Man number 537. And that's in January 2007. So a good amount of time after that What If issue.
And so this is written by J. Michael Straczynski, penciled by Ron Garney, inked by Bill Reinhold, colored by Matt Milla, lettered by Corey Pettit, and editors are Michael O'Connor and Axel Alonso. And so we read this because it has at this point become an incredibly famous and well-known moment in which Captain America is telling Peter Parker what America means to him.
Yes, it is a lengthy quote from Samuel Clemens, Mark Twain, that he's reading to him. And it's mostly in a Spider-Man issue, but then there is this amazing moment with Captain America. And the one thing I did like, which, you know, was definitely very much in the Marvel vein, is that after Cap gives this amazing moving speech and all these great quotes, it really ends with a joke coming from Peter about how he'll carry Cap's books at school and this kind of tongue-in-cheek moment.
He kind of fans out at that moment with Captain America, but it is because the speech is quite good. So it's in response to Peter describing that it feels like the country is bearing down on you like some kind of 10-ton weight and you don't know your heart anymore. And I thought that was a really interesting setup. Obviously, it's related to the Registration Act and Peter outing himself at that point. But then the Cap speech is talking about how it doesn't matter what the politicians say when the world tells you to move and you're standing up for what you believe in, you tell the whole world, no, you move. And so this has been used time and time again to refer back to for a number of reasons. I think it's a really moving moment. I think rereading it, it's incredibly apolitical. It's even valueless. Like he's actually, it's one of those things where he's not saying anything. It feels really passionate, but he's not saying anything. Anyone can read that and use it to sort of confirm their own ideas about America or about being a citizen or engaged, which I think was actually a little less true in the 1980 issue. I feel like by dealing with really current events and the question of him running, there you actually were getting some clear ideas from the writers about what it meant to be a politician and what it meant to be an elected official and what your priorities might be in that. And this is much more apolitical.
Mm-hmm. And in the next issue we're going to talk about, which is Siege issue number 4 from May 2010, we also get a little sense of Captain America is supporting. He serves the United States and he serves the president. He does not serve a particular party.
Yeah. So this is written by Brian Michael Bendis, penciled by Olivier Coipel, inked by Mark Morales, colored by Laura Martin, lettered by Chris Iolopoulos, and edited by Tom Brevoort. And we read it. It's the end of the Siege event, but Cap accepts an official government position.
And yeah, he's going to become the top cop in America, or take over being the top cop from Norman Osborn. And I thought that was interesting because then the next issue we're going to see is Steve in kind of dictator form. So I thought that was very interesting about, you know, what does being the top cop in America actually mean to Steve Rogers?
Yeah. And in this issue, at least, it doesn't explore too much about his views on it other than, as you said, his willingness, and that he actually says at one point he serves the president, but he wants to do it in his own way. So it matches a little bit with the What If issue in the sense that he feels this call to service, but he also has to do it as Captain America. Though in this case, he actually let Bucky be Captain America. Yes. That was the whole point of that.
And what you were saying too, in the apoliticalness, because when we see the president, we don't actually see who it is. The president's in shadow. We see silhouette. So it's not saying, oh, okay, it's 2010. So we're going to show Barack Obama on panel. It's a little bit more apolitical. We just know it as The Office.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, particularly because Obama does show up in the 616, of course, famously in An Amazing Spider-Man, but on the cover too. But you're right, it is perhaps telling that they chose to not have it be a specific individual.
And really the closest of these issues to really directly touching on the what if is actually Captain America, Steve Rogers, issue number 17 from May 2017.
Yeah, so this is part of the, of course, incredibly controversial Secret Empire event. This issue written by that event's architect, Nick Spencer, and penciled by Andre Guinaldo and Ramon Box, inked by those same two, colored by Rochelle Rosenberg, lettered by Joe Caramagna, and edited by Tom Brevoort and Alana Smith. And in this, Cap, of course, in Secret Empire is revealed or tricked or manipulated in reality to be a Hydra agent and therefore becomes supreme leader of Hydra, which takes over the US. So we read this because he's essentially the president of the United States. And in this issue, early on in the event, he's giving an interview to a journalist.
Yeah, and he's tricked or transformed into a Hydra agent because of the Cosmic Cube. So it kind of goes full 360 back to some of his early appearances and the Cosmic Cube's importance in his story. And I was surprised by how resonant this was with where the United States was in 2017 and kind of the allusions to current events. I actually thought it was a bit more on the nose than I expected it to be from a comic book from a very mainstream publisher.
Yeah, it's definitely a shift. I mean, it is interesting as you look at the major events of 2007 and 10, Civil War and Siege, you can tell the company was perhaps much more hesitant to be part of the national conversation. But by 2017, that's not true. I mean, Spencer's run on Captain America, Steve Rogers, and Captain America, Sam Wilson, are both incredibly political and reflective of current events around police brutality, around journalism and truth and politics and divisiveness and the rise of fascism. And all of that is really present here. So I'm actually a fan of the event. I think it's messy. I don't think it's super well executed, but I think the outrage about it is totally misplaced.
And I like really that. As not a reader of it, I just remember the outrage and remember the controversy around it. But of course, I never read it because I wasn't really reading comics then. So I was very pleasantly surprised by this single issue, at least.
I also like the head-on directness that Spencer was using to explore politics. And this, of course, Steve's voice shouldn't be trusted because he's the supreme leader of Hydra and is, falsely been brainwashed about that. But it's interesting that he claims he was appointed, and there's sort of this narrative about corruption of politics, that elections are corrupt. And then he has a lot of cuts to say about how fear has corrupted the country. And we saw in some of the earlier issues that we read that there is a theme on fear and sort of the role that plays in politics and in motivating people. And for sure, Spencer was reflecting the real electorate and election of the United States and the role that fear played on that.
Really rang true is that Steve says, yes, there's a lot of people that don't like what I'm doing, but there's also a lot of people that love what I'm doing. And then we see at the very end of the issue in some of the final panels that people are really celebrating Steve, even though he's this dictator who's putting inhumans in basically concentration camps. So I thought that really resonated with me because it's like, oh yes, you know, like if the country is 50-50, there are 50% of the country that's still loving Steve, even if he's now this dictator.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know that any of these issues were directly inspired by our what if Captain America became president, but definitely there's some themes brought out that circle back to that question.
Yeah, so I would definitely go suggest folks read this issue, especially if they're going to read the what if that we discussed and the issue that inspired the what if.
So this is Earth 81426. We actually never revisit the Earth of that what if before. Again. So what do you think? Do you want to go back to Earth 81426?
Well, they're ahead of us in terms of the environment, I thought, that they have these. True.
Well, assuming that they rebuild a new solar thing in outer space, but yeah.
I feel like they'd want to do that for Steve's legacy or Steve's memory.
That's true.
It's kind of like the JFK quote, where we didn't get to the moon during the Kennedy presidency, but then we're going to get to it kind of afterwards, that kind of thing. But, we don't get to see too much of the world. It's pretty close to our world. But, they would have had a black president in 1981. They would have had solar power. They would have moved away from foreign oil. So all those things are certainly things I would want to revisit.
Well, and I think, too, it raises, a lot of alternate universe stories do this. The Age of Apocalypse and, of course, recently, Heroes Return, the new one, Heroes Reborn, Heroes Return, sort of situate the world as if what happened if someone went missing and wasn't a part of it. And I think this could be an interesting world where what if Captain America actually served as Captain America, became president, died, but then how does the world continue from there? So what was his impact both on politics, but also on superheroes? How do the Avengers react? Will someone else run for president now, right? You could definitely do a what if that revisits this Earth where now superheroes just sort of are in elected office, and that could certainly present some interesting stories to tell that I would go back for.
Well, I think it is that, as I think what you're touching on is it's that speculative fiction element of that issue, as well as really that Nick Spencer issue that takes it a little bit further into the realm of maybe sci-fi. But so much of superheroes are really fiction. It's not really speculative fiction. So I think what really resonated with me is, there's a believability to this. There's some kind of basis in reality that I'd want to go back and explore further. And I think it's also what really is resonating with readers like you about the current X-Men run, where there is this kind of speculative fiction element to it, as opposed to dealing just with aliens and, cosmic events and things that are very much beyond our scope as human beings.
Well, and if we take what you were saying about the Nick Spencer stuff, reflecting a little bit about our more divided world today, it also makes me think there could be an interesting story to be told on Earth 81426, where there might be people who are now upset that he became president because it led to his death, right? So you'll end up with people who are perhaps against the idea of superheroes being in office. You'll end up with people who are for the idea because there's more to be done. So you can really begin to reflect parts of our, again, national conversation on Earth 81426.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's about it. So, dear watchers, thanks you so much for listening. You can follow us on Twitter at Dear Watchers.
And until we learn Uatu's telepathy, you can shoot us an email at podcast@dearwatchers.com. Make recommendations for future episodes, correct any mistakes we made, or ask questions.
Sure, there were some mistakes, so please let us know. And we'd also love for you to leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts. And we'll be back soon with another trip through the multiverse.
In the meantime, in the words of Uatu, keep pondering the possibilities.